Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I am your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, one of my really good friends, Mark Heim of the Alabama Media Group, host of the morning show on WNSP, FM 105.5 in Mobile. I could start telling you the numbers. It's 251-694-1055. Used to be star 105 on your singular wireless phone. I don't know if they even have singular wireless anymore. Anyway, we'll talk to Mark in a little bit about a lot of things. How to stay viable in talk radio these days with all the podcasts, all of the people who are on Sirius XM. As you might guess, Mark defends talk radio quite a bit. I like talk radio. I think you can make it work in a metropolitan area where there is drive time. You have to be really good to make it work. Boring talk radio, people just click off and they never come back. Anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. It's on Highway 6 West, right next to the Oxford Exxon, so you can stop and get your gas, fuel up at the Oxford Exxon, head next door and fuel yourself up at the Oxford Crystal. We tell you all the time about the combos. Of course, you know about the famous crystals, the Crystal Chicks, the homemade breakfast combo with the French toast sticks, fresh eggs, not the powder stuff. It's all there, the 59-cent Happy Meal. It's hot now. My baseball team had a game last night. It was at 6 o'clock. It was still 84 degrees. It's a perfect time to stop by and get an icy afterwards. You can get those at happy hour, 59-cent ices, 59-cent crystals. They're at the Oxford Crystal. Highway 6 West in Oxford. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios, Clark Ford in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, clarkfordinc.com. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. And then it's up to you. You can either take it and you can shop it around at a whole bunch of dealerships and all that stuff. That's cool. It's your prerogative. No one's stopping you. And it's not against the rules, but if you want to help yourself and save yourself a lot of time and a lot of hassle, let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they have done for customers from Cape Girardeau to Biloxi and all points in between, north and south, east and west, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. Just go ahead and get your best deal, and then at the end of the deal, tell Corey, say, hey, I heard about Clark Ford on the Beer Garden, or you can mention the Oxford Exxon podcast as well. Either way, $500 off the bottom line on your deal at Clark Ford, 662-257-1900. The Beer Garden, also brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. It's a full-service advertising and public relations firm doing business throughout the country. SPM works with companies of all sizes, Fortune 500 companies, all the way to local startups. They have a simple logic. SPM finds a way to tell a story about their client that captivates an audience that will eventually do business with the client. They focus first and foremost on developing a winning and unique strategy for their clients, whether that is through creating and implementing an aggressive digital and social media plan, producing a captivating television advertisement, or crafting a corporate communications plan to get a business through good or bad times. SPM always finds the right path forward. To learn more about SPM, get in touch with Austin Barber at austin@strategicpartnersmedia.com. austin@strategicpartnersmedia.com. The Beer Garden is also brought to you by Snooze Mattress Company, Snooze 2202 Jackson Avenue West in Oxford. They've got all the bedding that you know and love, Jameson, Tempur-Pedic, Serta. It's all there. They've got accessories, linens, pillows, mattress protectors, bed frames, delivery and setup options. Jacob Williams and the team there, they do a great job. I was talking to some people who went in just the other day, and they were raving about how easy it is. They've got a great selection from a simple purchase to the kind of sometimes people. My dad, for example, fell, broke some ribs. It's hard to lay down and sleep. He needs to be inclined a little bit. They bought one of those new mattresses where you can raise half of it. You can raise it at the head. You can raise it at the feet. So they've got all of that at Snooze. Get in touch with Jacob and the people there. It's gosnooze.com. And the podcast, last but not least, brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. Greg Jones and the people there at LB's are awesome. You should go in, grab lunch. If you have something you need catered, they'll take care of that as well. Or if you're just like me and on Saturday you say, man, I want to light the grill. I want to throw slabs of meat on a hot fire. They can take care of that too. They have the best slabs of meat anywhere in Oxford. Fresh cuts. The bone-in ribeye, I can't recommend highly enough. Their fillets are outstanding. Strip steak, tri-tip brisket, whatever you're looking for, Greg's got it. Chicken, pork as well. And grab some of the sausages. They're on your right. They're fantastic. They have the flying pig, the pork and green onion boudin, spicy Italian. My favorite, the chicken jalapeno. And they have all sorts of different ones all the time. The spicy bacon, all sorts of stuff there at LB's. The phone number again, 662-259-2999. When you go in to make your purchase, on the left, they have a beer fridge. Grab six. Tell Greg, hey, I heard about the beer garden on the I heard about LB's on the beer garden, and you get that six-pack of imports or craft beers. Six-pack for $6 there at LB's, 662-259-2999. Now let's go to Mark Keim. Talked to him for almost an hour about a number of things, so I hope you enjoy the conversation. Take a listen. All right, Marky Mark, welcome into the show. As always, it's fun to catch up with you. How you been?
I'm doing great. As far as sports goes, I think you said it best. It's April. So it is what it is, as a coach in this state would say over here in Alabama. But I'm just waiting to see how things pan out in Oxford. Is it going to be considered a football town or the next few months, or what are we doing?
Maybe the next few months.
I just didn't know if we were going to shut down the program for a while. Or
I don't think they're going to shut it down. I think they're going to let them play. In all seriousness, they go in front of – they have to finish their response to the second – or the amended notice of allegations. That is expected sometime around May the 23rd, give or take a few days. That's barring an extension filed from someone. Ole Miss won't file an extension. Maybe somebody else will. If there is no extension, so they file – I mean, hey, man, this thing's gone on so long. They file an
you almost seem bored with it.
There is a degree of boredom to it because it's so damn tedious. Now, that being said, once Ole Miss files its response, it's on. Because now we're going to really be able to talk about it. Like right now, it's impossible to talk about it, really. And if I had, you know, it's gotten to where you don't like to go anywhere. I don't like to go anywhere in town. Someone comes up to you and you're like, oh, God, here it comes. Here it comes. Oh, God.
Yeah.
You know how that works, and it's, what's the latest? And it's like, there is no latest. And then people say, well, what's taking so long? And it's like, do you read anything that anybody writes? There's a process, and the process is so bureaucratic. And so the NCAA will take 60 days. Then it will respond to Ole Miss's response, and then they're going to have a hearing. That's of course, because you know how it is in college athletics, man. You got to shut it all down. There can be no access. There's no transparency. They'll have a meeting, a hearing, if you will, in Indianapolis, and then it'll be another 6 weeks before they issue a ruling. And the way we understand it is the day before the final sanctions come down, Ole Miss will basically get a call that says, hey, We're going to give you your sanctions tomorrow morning around 11 a.m. We're going to make them public on our side at 1 in the afternoon. Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
And that's the deal. And yep. So, you know, once Ole Miss issues its release, we'll start to talk, and then there's all the talk about what happens with Hugh Freeze. Does he survive a show cause? Does he get a show cause? Is it a 2-year bowl ban? Is it a 1-year bowl ban? It's the one thing that's amazing, and you know how these things work. It's sort of like when this thing first started, if you had told 100 Ole Miss fans that, okay, you're going to get a 1-year bowl ban and you're going to lose 15 scholarships, they would have jumped off the bridge. And now, right. Now if you tell them 1-year bowl ban, 15 scholarships, oh, they'll fall.
We'll take it.
Oh, they'll fall to their knees, yep, in joyous rapture. And so I don't know. I don't know. People ask me all the time, "What do you think?" I have. There's no way for me to have an opinion without seeing in writing Ole Miss's response to the amended NOA.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question though, because you've seen it from the outside. You've covered the league and stuff. What did you think about all, and this was, I had no idea this was the direction we go right off the bat, but I do want to get your thoughts. What did you think about the whole immunity thing with Leo Lewis getting immunity to talk and Austin Golson at Auburn, that kind of thing? What did you think when you heard that? What do you think about how that works as a policy going forward?
I think it screams the NCAA is desperate to get information that they feel like they should have going through regular avenues but can't seem to get anymore. You know what I mean? It's like they're playing this game of cops and robbers, and they're playing the role of cop, but they don't have the power to be the cop. And so now they're making deals, and that gets real fishy. You start making deals, and you start – you know, you peel one layer of the onion back, and you don't know what's going to be under that next layer. I think it sets an extremely dangerous precedent, maybe not so much for the NCAA, but for football programs or athletic programs everywhere. Because now, you know, we always talk, and, you know, there was always that rumor and speculation that there are certain promises made to some kids, and then the NCAA comes in and there's some potential problems, and you worry about skeletons and closets. And now that kid that maybe wasn't getting as many carries as he was supposed to, or who was sold a fake bill of goods, now he's going to go in and start talking. You know what I mean? He can get a sweet deal. And so what happens next? How does that evolve? You know, if there's a – now are kids going to start running to the NCAA satellite office there in Oxford? About, you know, if their program gets in trouble and they're one of the key problems. I mean, if a kid gets recruited – illegally, or they're given improper benefits, which we all know happens day in and day out in every campus across this country, and he becomes the primary focus of an investigation, does that kid now go to the NCAA, whatever that is, and say, "You don't want me, I'm a very small fish in a very big pond. Let me tell you what they've been doing here for years, and I got documentation, and I got great sources, and I'll give it all to you, but you got to let me go. You got to drop the charges." I mean, that's where I see that going. I see why the NCAA is doing it, Neil. I mean, they've got no other course of action.
Yeah.
But I do think it's such an extremely dangerous precedent.
I'm not surprised that that's the direction they went, because this was a case where starting in spring of 13, the NCAA was motivated. I don't know whether it was I still think it was motivated to get Hugh Freeze. I think it was more Hugh Freeze than it was Ole Miss. And somewhere in all of this, it just kept taking turns. And when draft night happened, everybody said, "There it is, the smoking gun."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I mean, you know, a year later, there's nothing from that night. Nothing from that night. In the amended NOA, yet that night, some people think it kept it alive. I'm not sure. I don't know. That whole deal, I could write a book about draft night and my experiences with it.
Right.
You know, because...
But wouldn't you... But if you, Neil McCready, 5-star prospect, headed to Louisiana Monroe at whatever safety or cornerback you played, whatever, with your 5'2", 40 speed,
yeah.
If you got in trouble, if the NCAA said, "Hey, we got you," if you knew that you could get out of jail free card by serving up ULMO or whatever university you attended, wouldn't you do it?
Probably, if I'm honest. What's interesting about this is I think the NCAA wanted to talk to people in Tuscaloosa, and Nick Saban told his guys no. I think the NCAA wanted to talk to Austin Golson about more than they talked to Austin Golson about, and I don't think Austin Golson cooperated much.
Yeah.
That's what's fascinating to me is at the end of the day, I don't really know that the NCAA has the ability to compel a person to talk.
Right. And which is and you thinking that Saban wouldn't let them goes back to my point is it because Saban just doesn't want to get involved in some third party deal, or he's concerned about what else is going to get uncovered in the form of question?
Nick Saban's been at LSU as a head coach. He's been at Alabama as a head coach. Nick Saban is a smart man. Nick Saban is a practical person. He is smart enough to know that stuff goes on in his programs. And when I say that, I mean before I get fired at WNSP again. Stuff goes on in his programs that's out of his control. Stuff goes on in booster networks that is out of his control. Yet, the last thing he would want, and I've heard this about him for a long time, is for the NCAA to show up on his campus and carte blanche being able to start asking a whole lot of questions, and before you know it, you've uncovered a lot of stuff. The last thing any coach, I mean, Tommy Tuberville used to tell me this all the time, the last thing you want is the NCAA on your campus. Once they get on your campus, you can't get those sons of guns off.
Right.
I mean, look at Ole Miss.
By the way, you mentioned Tuberville. I'm going to switch gears on you real quick. What do you think? Governor of Alabama.
Well, I mean, he doesn't have a criminal record. That puts him in the top echelon in your state right now.
I don't even have a pithy reply to that.
How could you? I mean, we're a couple Louisiana boys. I mean Alabama is
– That's a great point.
Alabama's making a run, man, at just total corruption. I had Josh in love, Neil.
What more do you want?
I had Josh Moon.
It's a funny thing.
I had Josh Moon on the podcast the other day, and I said that Kay Ivey has a chance to make history. She can be the first female governor from the state of Alabama to go to prison.
Wow!
I mean, that is
an gotta be remembered for something.
I mean, that is an opportunity, isn't it?
Okay, so here's the thing, like you kind of get it from his perspective, right? I mean, look at him, right?
Yeah.
And she is, but you look at her and you say, like, what are you doing? It doesn't make any sense. He's like 102. Did I miss something here? Like, clearly, you know why he's doing it. I mean,
yeah.
He's him.
She got some cash out of this deal, don't you think?
She before or after they got found out?
Both. I mean, got.
Well, that's just.
I mean, I'm guessing she got cash. She got political favors. Her husband, who I don't think swings from that side of the plate, I think he got some political favors. I mean, stuff worked out for them that wouldn't have worked out otherwise.
No, clearly. All I'm saying that if my guess is, while she is older than you and me probably combined, she is not completely unattractive. I'm just saying that she had options. She didn't have to go to the retirement home and see the love go. That's all I'm saying. If she needed to step out, there were better options.
There were, well, yeah.
But he looks like he can be in the, he looks like he could be the star of the next Mummy movie, that guy.
I did not realize this until Josh told me. You know who he looks like? I mean, a lot like. Mr. Burns from The Simpsons.
Don't. Yes.
Can you believe? And when you see it, when someone says that and you look at the pictures of him and compare it to Mr. Burns from The Simpsons, the similarities are striking.
You think maybe that was the initial attraction by her?
She liked power. It's always been this way, the male-female thing. I mean, men will make life decisions based on a woman's chest. Women will you'll see the ugliest guy in the world with the beautiful woman. And you're like, well, he probably has a really great job. He makes tons of money. Yeah. He's got power. You very rarely see a really unattractive woman with an incredibly great-looking guy. It just doesn't happen.
Well, it could be that the guy just has great personality like you and I do.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, anything's possible in today's world.
Well, I mean,
they're looking for sensitivity.
Is that what is that
that's, humor?
That's how it worked for you. You're sensitive. Yeah. You're sensitive with a great sense of humor.
I'm a funny, sensitive guy. In fact, I'm getting ready to shed a tear down memory lane with Neil McGrady.
You said, Amy, one day I will host a morning show with Lee Shervanian. And she said,
and I'll no longer be the worst guy on air.
All right, so let's.
Lee's great. Lee gets some good guests. He's prepared the whole deal. And people always say, how do you do it radio every day with Lee Shervanian? And for those that don't know, Neil and I did radio for like 18 months together. Some of the best radio, most fun we've ever had. I've ever had, easily.
For sure.
And I said, because it's easy. I'll never be the worst one on the air. I'll always be the other guy. It's kind of like with Neil. Everybody hated Neil. I would sit there and I would just argue with you for no other reason than just to argue with you.
It made you the most popular person in Mobile.
Finally somebody would stand up to big bad Neil. And what a lot of people didn't realize is like Neil and I, after arguing at top of our lungs to the point where people were coming into our box and saying, y'all got to calm down because people can't even understand what you're saying. We would laugh at breaks about how funny it was. And people were like, y'all serious? I mean, it sounds like y'all getting ready to kill each other.
Yeah.
And at that time, you were twice the man you are today. I mean, you were what, 220, 250? What were you?
Oh, God. I was 260.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. My point was, I was never going to come across the table at you. So clearly we were just playing, but I digress.
So you're doing morning radio now in Mobile, which is not a huge market, but it's not a tiny market. It's a top 80 market or so?
I don't know. It's the second largest city in Alabama for what that's worth. I guess it's kind of like being the tallest midget. But go ahead.
Okay. And I didn't mean that as an insult. I just meant setting it up.
No, I understand.
You're doing local radio, strong FM signal in an era where everyone, I mean, look at me. I have two podcasts, for God's sake. I mean, everybody's got a podcast. XM, Sirius XM is more prevalent today than it's probably ever been. People are streaming on their devices. My point is that fewer and fewer people are just driving down the road listening to the radio the way that they did 10 years ago. How do you stay successful? How do you stay viable? How has talk radio changed since I left it 9 years ago?
Well, for one, I think one of the biggest pluses for radio is the ability to interact with that local radio station, right? So name any Colin Cowherd, Dan Patrick, whoever that you listen to on a daily basis. You call in and you want to get a word in or you want to talk to them, you may have to wait 45 minutes or an hour, right? If you want to get in, if you want to get feedback on your thoughts, you can do that with local radio. And with local radio, if you know your market, I mean, it's really like any other market. You're going to talk about what they want to hear, right? In our market, it's college football and it's big events. We don't talk a lot of NBA, but when you have got Harden going against Westbrook and you talk about the MVP, people want to chime in. If you want to talk about LeBron or Charles Barkley or the NFL or whatever, people want to, and you know this, people want to be heard and they want to be able to communicate their thoughts and be told they're right, or tell somebody else when they're wrong. And I think that's where local radio has a benefit over the national or even the podcast, because I think you get this immediate kind of gratification from interacting with those people. So for the most part, I think there was a huge spike in folks going to podcasts and using their devices, I actually recently got some numbers sent to me. More than half of the U.S. population between the ages of 18 and 64 still get their information from traditional radio. I mean, that's still a very big part of the population. That and it was basically a story about advertising and how advertisers should use that medium because people are still getting their information on sales and what they buy and where they buy in during that 30-minute ride in their car, which means people are still listening to the radio. And in fact, a majority of people are still listening to the radio.
I mean, I personally think people should advertise on podcasts and websites, but I mean, if you're going to throw some stats at me, so be it.
Broadcast radio, I'm reading now, 77% topped all other audio sources, including satellite radio, which was at 14%, and streaming audio at 1.4%.
Well, Mark, it's been nice talking to you. No, I'm kidding.
So, if you're looking for a job, if you want to come back on your hands and knees and beg, I can tell you, I think people would get a good laugh. I mean, I can't say they're going to bring you, but they take you back. But we could maybe get you a spot like weekly right after the Port City Pacer report. Maybe you could come on and talk about, you know, the JV team that they're fielding over that club sport, that football club sport they're doing over in Oxford now. I can make some calls. I can't make promises.
So. All jokes aside for a minute, because that morning show when it was like Lee and whatever cast of characters it was back in the day, I mean, you and I used to make fun of it all the time. We're like, they're going to do some Spring Hill volleyball and all that stuff. Are you doing more now? I noticed you had Jennifer Hale on this morning, I think, to talk Westbrook, Harden, Rockets, NBA. Thunder, NBA.
Yeah.
And Jennifer's really, really good and gets to – she could probably be more national than she is if she wanted to be. So, number one, why in the hell would she agree to come on your show? And then, number two, do you get enough of an NBA following to do that kind of thing consistently? Or or is there a push to stay super local the way that there always was in the past?
No, we've always, you know, it's funny. First of all, the reason Jennifer Hale comes on with us is because she's from Mobile. So that helps. Secondly, I think there is no push to go super local, but I think one of the things that make radio or any broadcast, whether it's TV, radio, or podcast, successful is personality. And so when you and I made fun of that show, there was no energy. It was, okay, let's do this, let's talk baseball, blah, blah, blah. But it's not entertainment in the sense that I'm going to sit there and tell jokes and like it's some stand-up routine. But folks want to be entertained. They want to be able to relate to what you're talking about, right? One of the most popular things that I can talk about is me coaching kids sports. It's not about the wins and losses or how we're doing, but it's about dealing with the things that everybody can relate with. Driving the kid to the practice, sitting there waiting. Dealing with that parent, dealing with, you know, the one that's looking for a scholarship for the 9-year-old. It's those things that people can relate to that they see every day that they have a strong opinion about. And so that's the part of the local flavor I try to bring. What is it, you know, and then you make jokes about the, you know, it's still the running joke, even when we were doing the show about going through the tunnel this time of year on a Friday afternoon and people don't know how to drive. And it's that part of being local. And, you know, we'll have storylines that pop up. We'll have former players come in town and sit with us. Like Deontay Wilder, who's the heavyweight champion of the world, WBC heavyweight champion of the world, was in Mobile with his family, visiting family. He came into the studios and we just talked. We have a number of former football players that still live in Mobile and come back. So we'll have them in. So we're not necessarily doing Spring Hill or University of Mobile or we do a lot of South Alabama, but, you know, we don't hit the hard, you know, we're not giving roundups of park baseball, but when we do go local, we usually tie it into a bigger regional or national story. With all these NCAA proposals about early signing period and stuff, obviously we'd have Joey Jones, South Alabama coach, come on and talk about how that and whether that's a benefit or not for him and his program, and we do that kind of stuff. But people still want their national sports. You know, people are still watching the NBA Finals. We may sit here, it may be popular to knock the NBA because it's not really exciting and there are a bunch of multi-million dollar babies that sit out of games and, you know, the whole deal. But at the end of the day, we love compelling stories, right? And you and I know this. I've told people all the time, it's great that there's a team in our state that continues to win at a high rate and they get to the playoffs and the whole deal. But give me a coordinator fired in the middle of the season as far as radio is concerned.
All day.
As opposed to a team that wins consistently. Because now you're on the air and you're talking about, well, you know, they won 32-0, but they only ran the ball for 110 yards on the ground. You know, Lane Kiffin, he's really got to learn to run the ball more. I mean, what are we talking about here? We've gotten so spoiled. And that's not specifically Alabama, just in general. We have such a high standard for all our teams. It's such an unrealistic expectation that we've gotten to the point where we just we bitch and complain about everything.
What was the response to losing to Clemson from radio callers? Was it, oh God, I'm pissed? Or did people say, you know, this is what real life's like?
Yeah, interestingly enough, people were not as outraged. I think it was one of those deals where people surprisingly said, yeah, it was bound to happen sooner or later. You can't win them all. You know, we had the whole debate. Was it the offense's fault? Was it the defense's fault? You know, the offense scored more, you know, enough points to win, but the defense buckled, you know. You know, we had that whole debate. But really, there was nobody that wanted anybody's head. It was different. Instead of blaming, there were a lot of excuses. Well, you know, it was a freshman quarterback, but, you know, what a great season he had. You can't win them all. And I've always said this, the ride to the top is a lot more fun than the one, and it's a lot easier than staying on top. And you knew Clemson was going to come into that game wanting it more than Alabama. We can talk about, oh, Alabama wanted it. Why wouldn't they want it? But there's something different about never winning it and being so close and getting another shot at it. I've seen it happen, and they just wanted it more. That Alabama defense was gassed. You know, we heard they were gassed, but all season we heard about how deep they were. Well, how can they be so deep and be gassed? It's got to be one or the other. So there was a little bit of excuses. There's a lot of excuses being thrown out, but at the end of the day, they just got beat. Now,
all right,
look what it takes to beat Alabama. I mean, I think that's the silver lining in all this. You go back in all their losses over, even the Ole Miss over the last few years, the very few that they've had, and it's been, I mean, I don't think since that Ohio State Sugar Bowl a few years back have they been beaten soundly. You know what I mean? It's taken a last-second play or a last-second drive.
Takes elite quarterback play to beat them. Maybe just for a day.
Yeah.
I mean, Bo Wallace was not an elite quarterback, but he had a great game that day. Chad Kelly was a very good college quarterback. Deshaun Watson's a phenomenal college quarterback. It has taken elite quarterback play to beat Alabama. And then, you know, any close game, always got a little irritated with Saban sometimes when he would do the, well, you know, we kind of beat ourselves that day. In any close game, when you're the team that turns the ball over, you typically lose. I mean, that's any game. I always be like, don't act like you. Sometimes that's what bugs me about Saban a little, is in situations like that, there's a tendency to act like he's the guy that reinvented the game. The game's always been the same way. If it's a close game, the 9 times out of 10, the team that wins the turnover battle wins the game.
Right. Sure.
All right. Something that's breaking as we tape this on a Thursday afternoon. Speaking of Alabama's defense, Reuben Foster failed a drug test at the combine. That news is breaking in the media. It's probably not breaking in football circles. They probably knew it. The Saints are sitting there at the 11th pick in the draft. They need defense. Foster's probably one of the people that they've really looked at. If you're the New Orleans Saints, is Reuben Foster a gamble, or is he worth taking?
Well, I'm gonna be on the fence on this one. I'm assuming the drug test, and I haven't read it. I saw the headline come across. I'm assuming it's marijuana.
I'm guessing. And in the NFL, they probably really don't care. I mean, it's but you know you.
No, of course not.
NFL players smoke
no,
dope, but it's the judgment thing that the NFL goes. So you knew you were about to get tested, and you couldn't just be cool for a couple of weeks. I mean, that's what the NFL's going to think.
Right. And then you go back to the whole, well, maybe we'll get the whole, I took a supplement and didn't realize that was a banned substance excuse. That's always one of my favorites, too. Do I take him based on that? Yeah, if they're looking linebacker. Now, a lot of people think they could be going a cornerback. So if they're splitting hairs between linebacker and corner, this could be the difference in going with him or a guy like Conley, the kid out of Ohio State. Now, you know me and Sean Payton. He's been, for years, he said he wants to go defense. And he always winds up going offense. So I'll believe it when I see it. But they need help at cornerback. They need help at defensive end. They need help at linebacker. I don't know if Reuben goes that high. Might be a little bit of a stretch. But the question is, would you go – in this day and age, it's so funny – this day and age, you say marijuana, and people don't even really bat an eye anymore. But your question, the question you posed is probably the right one, which is not that he was doing marijuana, but the fact that you knew this was coming up, you knew you were going to be tested, and you still got caught.
Yeah, it's just a judgment thing.
That's not exactly the...
Do you trust him?
Yeah. Yeah.
If I'm the Saints, I trust him.
I don't think he'll be there. I mean, I think he'll be there. I don't think he's going to go that high. But no pun intended, of course.
Right, of course not.
Of course not. But I mean, someone's going to take him. I mean, look what happened last year with the bong incident right before he got drafted. How many spots did he slide because of the bong incident? Laramie Tunsil.
Tunsil slid it could have gone as early as 2 or 3, and he went 11th. Something like that. Where are you? 17, 11? I don't know. He slid a good bit.
And that was the day of. I mean, if you wanted shock value, there's no more shock value than that. Now, at least Foster now has a week to go do damage control before they make the decision. So I can't imagine it's going to affect his draft status all that much. I mean, if Tunsil only drops 8 or 9, 10 spots on the day of the draft and a video comes out, I got to believe that Foster, with some damage control, won't affect him all that much. But I'm not sure if he's even a first-round guy.
Looked like one to me. Alabama loses a lot off that defense. What's kind of the feeling in that state about that team, the team coming up? I mean, is the consensus that – I know they've reloaded another top-ranked recruiting class and all that stuff. Are they going to be just as good, or do they finally fall off a little bit?
Well – you know, as many questions as they have about the defense, everything has been about the offense this spring, and Jalen Hurts and a new offensive coordinator. And I get this. Everybody, I think it's a pretty foregone conclusion that they're trying to pull back from the Lane Kiffin jet sweep, quick stuff, quick throw out, that kind of stuff. And they're going to go a little bit more pro style with some tempo. So they bring in Brian DeBall, who's supposed to be, don't say this to Saban because he'll bite your head off, about about being a little bit more pro style. But I do think they're going to keep that tempo type stuff in their repertoire. It just won't be presented the same way. They've apparently traded barbs, he and Kiffin, about whether or not they developed Jalen Hurts as a passer last season. So the talk now is going to be about Jalen Hurts, the passer. Because let's be real. I mean, he couldn't make the throws they needed him to make in some big games. And again, that usually is followed when most people are talking about Alabama with the whole, but he was a true freshman, to say that he didn't. I mean, he was the SEC Offensive Player of the Year. I mean, what do you want from a freshman? That's usually what we hear. But clearly, there's more. There needs to be more to his game for Alabama to be successful. They've got to be able to throw the ball down the field. And they're hoping this year that's what will wind up happening. Defensively, they reload. I mean, I can't. It would make sense, Neil, to say that they drop off, because at some point they have to. But they keep having these top recruiting classes, and they just keep bringing kids in. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen in college football. So I guess to answer your question, I guess I'll have to see it to believe it, that they'll actually fall off. I mean, what would people say in the state if they wind up going 8-4 one year, 9-3?
Oh, I think it would be viewed as dramatic failure there, and that's where I think he loses his cool with that fan base when it happens, if it happens. I don't know that it can happen. I mean, I think he has dominated the league in such a way that he has made the rest of the league reactionary and therefore worse. I've made a lot of people in the league mad. Like I think there's some people inside the league office that I think don't like me saying this, and I tweet it and stuff. I don't think the league's very good. People keep doing the SEC, man. I mean, you know how it is every year. SEC, man, top to bottom, man, it's just the very best. It's just a dominant league. It just wears you down and beats you up. I'm like, No, it's not. I mean, I watch the league. The league the last couple of years hasn't been very good. Who's been good? Alabama's been really good. Who else has been good? Like, legitimately, you watch them and you're like, they're good. There's a team here and a team there. Ole Miss in 2015 was a really good team, but they couldn't stop anybody.
Yeah.
There have been teams that have been really good on the offensive end. They can't stop anybody on defense. Or their Florida the last couple of years been a really good defensive team, but they are anemic on offense. I mean, just awful. LSU's had athletes, no quarterback play. I don't think the league's been good, but nobody can say that because there's so much pushback when you say it. No, man, the league's really good. I'm like, no, the league's not really good. Everyone in an attempt to catch Alabama goes back and forth with what they are, and they regress, in my opinion. Meanwhile, he is just the picture of consistency.
Well, but do they regress, though?
I think so, yes.
Alabama, if you remember the last couple of years, had to change what they did, at least defensively. And he did it in a way that has made them better. But you remember, he was trying to play catch-up a little bit with Gus Malzahn early in that whole chess match. And he had to go out and get, you know, last year, this was the fastest defense Saban's ever had. Well, that was by design. He knew he had to get faster in order to shut down a run-pass option, and they had to play more disciplined ball. And they couldn't do it with the big, heavy uglies on the defensive line. They had to get thinner. They had to get faster, and they did. So I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'll ask you this. How is it that he had to, quote-unquote, catch up and become better, but the rest of the league trying to catch up with Saban has made them worse? See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I do think they've gotten better. I think Alabama's gotten better. Alabama's more invested in it than anyone else. They recruited a higher level than anyone else. I'm in the minority that defends them on all the hiring of the analyst and all that stuff. No one at the rest of the league is being stopped from investing at the same level that Alabama is. No one. There's no rule against it. I mean, if Auburn wanted to go out tomorrow and hire 200 analysts, no one's stopping them. There's no rule against it. There probably will be a rule eventually, but there's not one now.
Right.
And I don't know. I watch, my eyes tell me that the rest of the league's not. I didn't think the SEC was good last year. I watched a lot of really mediocre football.
Yeah, I mean, and it's the same characters. I mean, you look at, I always point to LSU. Now, I think that is one program that year in and year out competes from a talent standpoint.
Sure.
With Alabama. But
not on the field.
We all know what happened with Les, and we're going to find out what happens with Orgeron. I'm not so sure long term. I was on with you some time ago, and I think I liked the hire at the time, but I think over time, you know, because I know he's one of their guys and the whole deal, and that made for a real popular hire. But you wonder if he can maintain any type of success long term, if he can find it in the first place, and that's a lot of ifs, but. I'm with you. I didn't think the SEC was all that spectacular last year. I mean, Mississippi State without Dak Prescott clearly was very mediocre.
Yeah.
Arkansas, who I always thought has had a little bit of a leg up because they're not complete so entrenched geographically in the SEC in the Southeast like some of the other ones, have always had a little bit of a recruiting edge because of their location. They're not necessarily fighting for the same kids. And I think Brett Bielema has done an okay job, but that's always a team that can be the dark horse. But it hasn't even been that in the last couple of years. So, you know, you look at the SEC and you look at Alabama, and to me, you look at LSU, and after that, you know, Florida should be a sleeping giant, and at some point I think they're going to get out of that and find an offense. But I'm with you. I think they're just a lot of mediocre teams. I mean, Kentucky, Kentucky just gave their kids rings after finishing 7-6 and losing in the Tax Slayer Bowl. That is all you need to know about the SEC.
All right.
Did you see that story?
I did not, and don't. It's because I want to ask you. We're gonna finish in just a minute with Little League stuff, and remind me to get back to that because I'm getting old and I forget things now. So remind me to get back to that because I want to get your thoughts on participation trophies and all that stuff for Little Leaguers in just 1 second. First, let me ask you this. Ole Miss opens the season with South Alabama. Kane Womack's there. Something tells me he might talk to his dad during the offseason a little bit about Hugh Freeze's offense. Joey Jones has done a really good job at South Alabama. They beat Mississippi State a year ago. They beat San Diego State. I think they beat Troy. I know they had some losses too, but they've started to every so often pick up some pretty nice wins. How much of a threat are they in Oxford in early September?
I think they are from a standpoint of they've got some kids that can play with anybody, right? And when I say that, I look at that Mississippi State game. They have the confidence to go into these big games, which some of these other opponents may not feel are as big. I mean, let's be honest, and win them. The problem with South Alabama right now, and we had this discussion all this past year, you know, when they beat Mississippi State, we had this hypothetical situation. Would you rather beat Mississippi State and have a terrible conference record or lose that game knowing you're supposed to lose it and make a run through the Sun Belt and get to a great bowl and the whole deal and contend for a championship? And then it actually happened, Neil. They beat Mississippi State and they kept losing all these games that they shouldn't have lost. They were way too talented to lose some of these Sun Belt games. And we can sit here and talk about how great the Sun Belt. The Sun Belt's not good. It's not good football. I mean, when you're talking about college football on the national scale, it's the Sun Belt. It'll always be the Sun Belt. Yeah. I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
I mean, you can find some entertaining games along the way.
That league is ULM and a bunch of bozos.
There were people talking about Joey's future at South. And they beat San Diego State, who was ranked number 23rd in the country. They went out to San Diego State and beat them. That is a huge win for South Alabama.
Yeah,
you know, for an Ole Miss or an Alabama Miss, that's a cupcake. That's a huge win. They beat both of those teams this past year, but were awful in conference, and people couldn't stand it. It didn't make any sense how this team could go out and beat top 25 contenders like those and lose to Lafayette or Monroe,
sure,
or whoever. They've got to start winning the games they're supposed to win. They've got to get more competitive in the league, regardless of how they do in the non-conference schedule. And look, they built that program the right way. It's not that old. We've talked about it. They scheduled a bunch of cupcakes in the first 2 years, and they went undefeated in the first year. And they built it the right way. But he's got to start winning some games now in conference. So to answer your question, they're going to be very hyped. They're going to be very confident about going into that game. I think we even joked with Joey because of the sanctions and all that kind of stuff. But look, Joey knows that it's the SEC. You know, they were supposed to play LSU last year, and they had to get bought out because of the whole LSU Florida fiasco. South Alabama game was the got tossed.
They the hurricane get that game.
And yeah. Look, yeah, and truth be told, he would never say this on the air, but Joey didn't want to play that game. He was trying to get to a bowl at that point. They replaced him with a cupcake. They wound up going bowling. Had they played LSU, they wouldn't have gone bowling. So I think Ole Miss takes care of business in that first game, but it's not going to be – those kids are going to come in pretty pumped and pretty stoked. I mean, Dallas Davis, he is their quarterback, incredibly talented, didn't play this spring because of injury. But is an incredibly athletic quarterback that could pose some problems. Now, whether or not he's got a lot of help still remains unclear. I think they got some depth at receiver. They lose their great tight end to the draft, who's going to get drafted, by the way, Gerald Everett. So we'll see. But, I mean, Ole Miss Vegas is going to love Ole Miss in this one, clearly.
All right, let's finish, and I appreciate your time. It's always fun to catch up with you. Are you coaching Little League baseball?
I don't do baseball. I do football and basketball. We're in the middle of summer basketball right now.
Summer basketball?
Yeah, AAU, YBOA. We go to
Pensacola, Gulf Shores, Ocean Springs, Baton Rouge, Auburn.
Are you a typical AAU kind of guy, kind of dirty? You got your hands out, it's understood that the coaches have to come through you to get to your guys. Is that kind of your philosophy?
Yeah, you see, I'm not so sure the makeup of our team probably prohibits me from playing that role if I wanted to, if you can read between the lines there.
Your team's kind of short?
We're kind of short, we're kind of slow, but we're fundamentally sound, Neil, and that keeps us in some ball games.
You running a lot of zone, or you installing man-to-man principles?
Oh, yeah. No, in these tournaments, we do not match up man-to-man, sir. It is a lot of zone. We'll run a 3-2 or a 2-3 or a 1-3-1. There is not a whole lot of man going on.
Now, how old are...
Look, I'll tell you a quick story. So Steven, my youngest, is playing. He is a third grader playing on a fourth grade team, but there are no fourth grade divisions. So the fourth grade team is playing in fifth grade divisions.
Okay.
And so there are two teams at Port City Rain. There's a red and a white team or whatever. I had to coach one of his games. We played a team that beat the other Port City team 62-17.
It's not good.
Okay, these are fourth graders playing fifth graders that are. And the rule in YBOA is it's not based on age; it's based on grade, your grade level. If you understand what I'm talking about, there,
I do.
So you don't have to be 9 and under as long as you're in the fifth grade. You can play. I mean, you can be a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old fifth grader and still be able to play. Anyway, they lose 62-17. They went man the whole game. I was like, I looked at the coach and said, you're out of your mind to think that these – well, they got to learn to play man. I'm like, well, they're learning. They're learning the hard way.
Yeah.
So I put in 10 minutes before the game up because it's his team. I put in warm-ups, I put in a 3-2 zone and a press breaker. We were down 10 at halftime. And I had 8 on the team. 3 of them had to leave for baseball practice. We wound up losing by 30.
You walked out of there kind of chest puffed up, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a moral victory. I almost handed out trophies.
Are you a big trophy person? Because I'm totally against the participation trophy thing.
Here's my thing. In general, I'm against the whole principle of a trophy thing. But with that said, I understand why they do it for 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds.
Yeah.
And the whole deal.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, yeah, when they're so little. Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. If it gives a kid a reason to be excited about playing a sport and adds a reason to why he would want to continue to play, then I'm okay with it.
Right.
I mean, I've had basketball teams that have competed for Alex, my middle one who plays basketball, he's a sixth grader now. I can honestly say he's pretty good. He's really good. I mean, he's not Division I, ain't calling him tomorrow, but he's not getting letters. He's not that, but he, for his age, he is very good. And we had a team that actually, we've been fortunate enough to win 3 straight in our school division and won titles and got the trophy and the whole deal. And one year we had a kid come out for the first time, trip over painted line, didn't want to be out there. I looked at him during practice. I said, do you even want to be out here? And he said, no, this is a 12-year-old. I said, well, what are you doing out here then? He's like, well, my dad made me do it. And so I felt like it's counterproductive for this kid who doesn't want to come out to be a part of a championship team. And he had absolutely nothing to do with it. We rewarded him for absolutely nothing. It's basically that whole trophy mentality, not necessarily in the traditional sense. But he got a trophy. He's going to get his trophy for being a part of a championship team and did absolutely nothing. And what kind of message does that send to that kid? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I had a basketball team that I coached, just a city league team.
I've seen you play basketball, so I can only imagine how that went.
Well, we got physical. I mean, we were nasty. We had a little tough streak to us. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, it was, you know how sometimes you coach a team that by the end of the year, you really are going to miss the kids? And sometimes at the end of the year, you're like, man, if I never see those 3 or 4 kids again, I'm good.
Yeah.
It was the latter.
Yeah.
Hey, where are our trophies? What are you getting a trophy for? What'd you do? You didn't ever show up to practice. We never won. You refused to run the defense that we taught. You refused to listen to me when I talked about shot selection. It's why we lost games. It's no big deal. It's not the end of the world. I mean, why do you deserve a trophy?
Right.
And what do you mean deserve? Yeah. What do you mean deserve a trophy?
Right.
Why don't I just get one? Well, because you didn't earn one. It's like, yeah. I'm coaching Carson's baseball team. We have a game tonight, actually. And the other day, I'm like, okay, hey, last thing, guys. Hey, let's kind of go over the steal sign. Because you can steal, and at this age, if you don't steal, you're insane. You ought to take the base. And
right.
But we were playing a team that they actually had a catcher who could catch and throw. And so I said, well, let me see if the shortstop can catch the throw before we decide whether we're going to steal or not. And so I said, let's put the sign in. It's going to take 5 seconds. Of the 11 kids there, if 10 seconds later I'd said, okay, what's our steal sign? 4 would have been able to tell me. There's like no attention span, no nothing. And yet it's where's – and you know it's the where's the trophy. And I'm in the – I don't blame the kids for being this way. I blame our generation for making them think that. I remember when we were kids I'm not trying to be like the guy that's like, hey, when we were kids, I walked through the snow uphill both ways to get to my school. It wasn't – not that, but – if you wanted to win a trophy in the YMCA league in Ruston, you had to win the championship.
Yep.
And I remember being 9 years old, maybe, and we were the Panthers, and we beat the Steelers for the flag football championship, and I got my first trophy, and we were going to my grandmother's house that day, and I couldn't wait to take my trophy to show her.
Yeah. No, I get it. And look, I say this about kid sports. I say, give me good kids that listen and want to be there. That's all I ask. And hopefully they have some athletic ability. But the first two are essential. Give me that they listen and that they want to be there. And I picked my team in second grade, and I've had a team every year, and I picked the ones I need. They went 500 in basketball the first year. But in their last game, they almost beat the undefeated team, and I had my come to Jesus moment. I was like, I got something here going. The other team, we had two teams in that grade, and we both went 500, so we kept the teams the same way. Next year, we won every game but one, got to the championship and lost. And then the year after that, we won every game but one, and we finally beat the team that we had to beat. And it was the first time in 3 years that those kids got a trophy, and it meant something because they worked for it. They battled and battled that same team 3 or 4 times in the span of 3 years and could never get over that hump. And they finally got over that hump, and they got rewarded for it. And I made that point very clear. But, you know, I've always said this too, Neil. The worst thing about kids' sports, I tell people this all the time, I say, the worst part about kids' sports is you. And then I say, not you specifically, but adults in general. I mean, there was a kid that played on our AAU team whose dad said all he cared about was getting to the chip of whatever tournament we were at. I was like, what? He's like, we just got to get to the chip. Got to get to the chip. Got to win the chip. No, I want to play as many games as humanly possible because we paid an arm and a leg to get in this tournament. So I'd like to play as many basketball games as possible. But as long as this team is better at the end of the season as they were at the beginning than they were at the beginning of the season, then it's a success. But all he wants to do is have his kid go out there and put up 40. Ironically enough, he is no longer part of our team because he felt like he wasn't getting played because of the color of his skin. It's so ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd.
Yeah, we could go on for a long time about a lot of the stuff like that, because it's like the all of the travel baseball teams and all that stuff where.
Oh, it's a racket now. Look,
that's
Pensacola, Florida. Would it cost for admission to get into some of these basketball tournaments, and you got to stay over there all day, and so you're at the local Chick-fil-A or Wendy's or Subway or whatever, and oh, dude, the money that gets poured out just so you could say that you've been on a travel team or that you're on an all-star team or an elite team, it's ridiculous. It's the biggest racket in the world.
Yeah, go to like the Orange Beach Sportsplex or they've got a big baseball facility here. There's a big soccer facility in Tupelo, and there's a tournament there every single weekend. I don't blame them. They have created a racket, and the sporting goods stores are making a ton of money, and good for them. I mean, I'm all for capitalism, but it's amazing how many people think that they're producing the next Bryce Harper because they're playing 85 baseball games at the age of 9. It's like, nah, it's not really how it works.
I had a dad get mad at me during football season because he said that I wasn't playing his kid as much as I had been before because I had an argument with his wife in a booster club meeting, and I was taking revenge out on his wife by not playing his child.
You've gotten an edge to you. Let me ask you this real quick before we go. Your football coaching philosophy, do you let your assistants talk to the media? I mean, how do you handle access to your practices? Do you allow your players to talk to the media? Kind of like, what's your philosophy on controlling the message?
It's the first thing I tell them, players and parents, when they come out to the field for the first day of conditioning. I say, ladies and gentlemen, these are your kids when they're not on this field. I said, when they're on this field, they're mine. Get the hell out.
Wow. That is the strong.
Yeah, it's one team, one voice, Neil McCready. There is a process that we go through in this state. It's not for the weak.
Right.
And it's my way or the highway.
That's fascinating. So it sort of starts there, and that's how they all become little disciples. Is that sort of how it works?
Just disciples. We try not to put a size to it because there is a man of high stature, but he's kind of little. We don't like to talk about size. We don't want anybody to think that we're overcompensating for anything in the state, Neil.
No, I would never think that. I would never think such a thing.
You'd be proud of me, by the way. I know we're wrapping up, so I want to throw this out here. Yeah. I've been adamant supporter of Russell Westbrook for MVP for weeks. Before we even started about this whole Harden Westbrook thing, I'm on the Westbrook bandwagon. I have been all season.
Yeah.
Win or lose?
I mean, if you watch the series at all, you can't compare the two supporting cast. I mean,
no.
I mean, it's not even close. There's, I mean, Russell would kill for Trevor Ariza, for Ryan Anderson, for Lou Williams. I mean, all those guys. He's got so many guys who can knock down an open shot. And the Thunder are the worst three-point shooting team in the league. It's something they have to address in the offseason. I mean, Westbrook took 18 shots in the fourth quarter, which is way too many, but nobody else made a shot either. And so, you know,
right.
I mean.
And then I saw an interesting stat, you probably saw it because you were watching the game clearly. When he's on the floor, and this was before the end of the game, but and for those just listening, this is as of Thursday, plus 16 when Westbrook's on the floor as far as score and deficit, negative 13 when he's off the floor. Meanwhile, Westbrook was on the floor, Harden was off, and the Rockets made a run. Like, that just doesn't happen with Westbrook's team, and that's not his fault. I think it only adds to the argument that he is clearly more valuable to his team than anybody else in the league.
That's why at some point you got to help me get Jennifer Hale on the show. I want to pick her brain on what the Pelicans are going to do going forward. Because if I'm the Pelicans, I trade Anthony Davis and get pieces and go into a rebuild because there's no way he stays.
Well, what'll be interesting with that though is everybody, they're not playing the type of ball game that the rest of the league is playing. Can they, with those two guys, make the rest of the league, when they play the Pelicans, play that style of ball? And that's a big if.
Yeah.
Meaning, can you go back to a traditional post game and make them play your style of basketball? I'm not sure you can.
I'm not sure you can
to
count
find
on
out if they could.
I love DeMarcus Cousins, the player, but I'm not sure you can count on him. I'm not sure you can build your franchise around him. I'm just not. I hate being this guy because it's the worst hot take ever, except for the fact that it appears to be accurate. He doesn't appear to be a winner in the NBA.
Well, you wonder if teaming him with Davis though might help in that regard.
Maybe
like,
so.
He doesn't necessarily have to be the guy. He just has to be one of the guys.
Yeah, maybe so. We'll see. All right, man. I appreciate the time as always. Good talking to you.
Yeah, I hope we covered everything.
I think in 57 and a half minutes, we covered damn near everything in life.
Especially on an April day. So, hey, call me anytime. It was good talking to you. Tell the family we said hello. Maybe we'll see you on the beach someday.
That'd be cool. Thanks, Marty.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye. Again, my thanks to Mark Heim, one of my dear friends. We used to do radio together, had a great time. So it's fun to catch up with him. We'll do that again sometime this summer, getting closer to football season, and pick his brain about some stuff and have some fun. So, again, thanks to Mark Heim for joining us on The Beer Garden. That wraps it up for this week. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back next week. We'll try to do some fun stuff. I know that the NHL playoffs are going on. I'm interested. Nashville swept Chicago, so they're in it. We might talk about the Predators a little bit. Kentucky Derby getting closer. We'll have some fun, come up with some topics. Major League Baseball season ongoing, the NBA playoffs ongoing. So we'll visit with people about those topics and more next week on The Beer Garden. Until then, take care.